This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, welcoming you to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the show trainers listen to, and it is a pleasure to have all of you listening throughout North America and around the world on Sirius 162, XM 207, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. Well, opening day of Woodbine's 2024 Thoroughbred Meet is this Saturday. All week we are celebrating Woodbine Week here on HRRN, and that celebration continues on today's edition of Trainer Talk as I get to spend some time with one of the most recognizable names in Canadian racing. Trainer Kevin Attard grew up in Ontario, Canada, and has followed in the footsteps of his father and three uncles, each of whom are highly successful trainers. As a matter of fact, his uncles Sid and Larry are both members of the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame. Sid as a trainer and Larry as a jockey. So who better than Kevin Attard to talk about the history and the traditions which make racing at Woodbine so special? Kevin, appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, really excited to spend this time with you here today. And, you know, your family has undoubtedly played a major role in shaping Woodbine's history and your achievements of conditioning some of the top Canadian-based horses in recent years, including Horses of the Year, Starship Jubilee, and Moira, are forever going to be a part of that tremendous history. When you hear those words, what kind of things go through your mind?
Definitely there's a lot of pride and honor. When you kind of, you know, hear the name of Attard recognized with Canadian racing, obviously a big part of Woodbine. As you kind of opened up, Sid and Larry, both in the Hall of Fame. Sid, my father, Tino, both leading trainers throughout, at points throughout their career, right? Joe Attard, who kind of led the way here and kind of set the path for them all, another successful trainer in his time. So it's something I don't take lightly. And, I know it's obviously helped kind of pave a path for me. But the big thing, I think, with everything is the Attard family is, I think, known for hard work and dedication, and my father kind of instilled that into me, and I'm trying to do that to my son now.
You don't think of Woodbine without thinking about the Attards, and you don't think about the Attards without thinking of Woodbine. Why has Woodbine been – why was it initially the place that your family said, okay, this is where we're going to make our mark?
Yeah, well, they migrated from Malta, and kind of were working actually behind the racetrack in a steel factory, and it kind of led them to the racetrack, and they started working together and kind of learned the trade and branched off on their own and set themselves up with successful careers here. So I think it's just a kind of, just a matter of fortunate circumstances that they, kind of chose Ontario to come and kind of continue their life after leaving Malta, and Woodbine has become their second home.
You mentioned your son. Is he as passionate about horse racing as you are?
Yeah, definitely. He's very astute in the game. He kind of watches all the podcasts and learned to read the racing form at a young age. So he's still in school right now, but he works with me when he's finished school, and he's learning from the ground up. Started as a hot walker, grooming now, and kind of working his way up the ladder and just learning things as he goes along.
Does he want to train, or do you see him being involved in another aspect of the industry?
Definitely wants to be a trainer. I just kind of told him that him and his mother, kind of we had a discussion that education was first kind of paramount of importance to kind of to do and finish off and get a diploma or a degree in a post-secondary education. And then after that, he's free to kind of choose the career path he wants. And I think it's pretty certain that he's coming here to the racetrack.
What things are you going to make sure that you really instill in him if he's going to be a successful trainer? What different aspects of teaching will you employ to make sure that he can have success when he does do this?
Well, I think just kind of obviously growing up in the household, he sees my dedication, my passion to the game. There's no days off. There's early mornings, late nights sometimes. So he sees that part of it. He's experiencing that part of it now. You know, he gets up at 3:30 to get to the barn and start his tasks, right? So, I mean, there's not many 20-year-olds that, have that drive or dedication to do that, right? It takes a certain type of individual, and that's what I've kind of tried to teach them, that this game requires a lot of time and dedication, and you need to kind of, give it your all if you want to be successful, right? So it's a game of details, and you can't leave no stone unturned.
He's already experienced on the ownership side of things too, isn't he?
Yes, yeah. So, I got him owning horses at a young age, and he's had some success, and, he's even gone to the sale and picked out some babies. He actually picked out a horse called Keep Grinding, who kind of, headed into the Queen's Plate, and I think he ended up fourth or fifth that season, ran a good race. He's been a handy horse for him. So, he's learning kind of all sides of the game in that sense, and I just think overall for his future, it'll just kind of make him a better horseman.
How appropriate is that name, Keep Grinding? Because if he's going to be a successful horse trainer, man, it can be a grind, and you got to get up every day ready to work, as you just outlined. I think that name is perfect for a horse that he was involved with early on.
Yeah, definitely. It's the name he picked out as well, so it was appropriate. I think he kind of got that from his kind of youthful days in playing hockey, but it definitely pertains a lot to horse racing as well.
So what is it that makes Woodbine so special, Kevin?
Yeah, Woodbine's a great facility. I've been fortunate enough to travel to different racetracks, but the training facilities here, the options that you have to train a horse, are probably the most I've seen in North America. We obviously have a dirt mile track. We have the dirt synthetic track. We have a 7-furlong training turf course. There's a quarter mile little sand ring at the back. And then a kind of European style field on the other corner. That's probably about a quarter mile to 3 furlongs long as well, right? So a lot of places to be able to take a horse. And sometimes even just take them off the racetrack itself and train them in an environment where it's kind of a little bit less stressful for them, right? So definitely the resources that you have here for training are number one.
What are some of your earliest memories of being around the racetrack and your family's operation?
I would have to say 1986. I was 11 years old. My father had his first stake horse. His name was Fozzie Bear. He was a 2-year-old that went 6-for-6 that season, undefeated. Broke a track record in his first start, and then reeled off 5 consecutive stake races. Right, so I think that's what really kind of cemented my path into horse racing, in a sense. Prior to that, I was kind of more just thinking, I wanted to be a jockey because they seem to kind of get all the glory and recognition. I think at that point, I realized that, I want to be like my dad.
Could you ride?
I did exercise a little bit. I didn't do that till my late teenage years. my father, for some reason, always wanted me on the ground. And then the one day I just said, you know what, I want to try it. And I did. And I wasn't too bad at it. So, he let me gallop for a few years after that. And then it got to the point where I was just I needed to be on the ground more than on top of their backs.
So safe to say that Fozzie Bear is the horse that got you hooked on horse racing.
I would definitely say so. He's my first real kind of memory and kind of significant memory of, so excited at the track and following a horse that closely. There was a lot of publicity surrounding him at the time. Him being named after one of the Muppet characters. When I look back and I reflect, that's my first real, significant memory.
What was your dad's reaction when you told him you wanted to follow in his footsteps and be a trainer?
I think he's always enjoyed the fact that him and I have worked so closely together. We had a good relationship, and it got to the point when I became an assistant for him that he really kind of sacrificed his career to make sure my career kind of took off. And he kind of gave me the reins of his operation and let me kind of take slowly control over it. So he thought of me first and he tried to put me in a path to be successful. And, obviously I owe him the world for that.
If he didn't do that and Fozzie Bear never came along, what else do you think you may be doing outside of racing if you didn't follow in his footsteps?
I think about that, and I did get an accounting degree at college because the only thing I really liked in school were numbers. So I'd have to think I would have probably worked in some sort of aspect working with numbers, whether being an accountant or maybe working in a bank. I don't know, something like that. I would have to think.
Is that helping you now as a horse trainer? Because let's face it, there are two sides to the business, taking care of the horses and taking care of the business side of it.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something that you need and does benefit you. Training horses is not easy. It's very expensive to maintain a stable, to maintain a barn with staff and obviously feeding the horses the right way, and all the little kind of tidbits that go along with managing a training operation. So definitely some background or some knowledge of accounting has definitely kind of helped me.
Talking with trainer Kevin Attard here on Trainer Talk presented by Fezzik Tipton, looking back on his history with Woodbine and his family's history and talking about his father, Tino, and what he had accomplished and the way he took Kevin under his wing. And as Kevin said, sacrificed his operation in essence to get Kevin started. And boy, what a move it has been. Kevin, the trainer of a couple of horses of the year, and we're going to talk about them too. But Kevin, let's go back again to your dad. When you did start to take over and do more with his operation, who were some of the other horses that stood out to you?
Well, so at that time, then we were training for Frank Stronach, Stronach Stables, and we had horses like Milwaukee Brew in the pipeline there. He won the Ohio Derby. Was obviously a very successful horse prior to kind of going to Frankel and kind of capping off his career with kind of back-to-back, I think it was Santa Anita Handicaps, right? So, and a Breeders' Cup Classic, a good placing there. So he's definitely one horse that I feel very fortunate to have the experience to kind of work with. We also had a filly by the name of Kirby Song. She won the Woodbine Oaks and then went on to Monmouth to win the Monmouth Oaks at the time. She was another filly. Took us to the Breeders' Cup as well. So that was a very good experience for me. I got to travel with her to Hollywood Park, learned a lot with that horse and working with that horse and traveling with that horse. I think that helped me immensely. And there were other good horses along the way. My dad ran a claiming stable, really, and the odd horse you know, would come up and pop up to be a stake horse. But I mean, we made a career out of claiming horses, trying to improve them, working on them, you know, finding horses with back class. And, you know, I mean, I think that's kind of what kind of put my career into where it is today is, you know, obviously I claimed, you know, a Starship Jubilee, as you mentioned, Horse of the Year, Calgary Cat, who went on to become a champion sprinter in Canada, and another horse by the name of Melmich, who was, you know, a multiple graded stake winner. You know, those three horses all went on to win over $1 million each after being claimed. So, you know, those are just lessons that I learned from my dad along the way, like claiming horses and picking them out and working on them and trying to get the best out of them.
What kind of things did you learn when you were traveling with Kirby's Song? You said that there were a lot of things you were able to pick up on traveling with Kirby's Song. What were they?
I just think it's how horses travel, what you need to kind of make them comfortable. Obviously, I've found over the years that the horses are a little bit more comfortable when they recognize the people that work with them on a daily basis. Even though you put them in a new environment, they recognize, obviously, the grooms that work with them every day or the exercise rider, you know, and just kind of, you know, preparing them to travel, you know, before they even, you know, board a van or head on an airplane, just little things like that, and making sure that their the travel arrangements are going to be as smooth as possible for them to make you know, the transition from moving from wherever they are to their next stop and running a successful race.
How did you know you were ready to go out on your own?
You know, I was content staying with my dad at the time, and I got a call from Frank Stronach one day, and he asked me to begin training horses off of his farm here in Aurora, Dina Springs North. And he kind of proposed, you know, that I would be looking after a bunch of two-year-olds, getting them ready, and then they would kind of move on to other trainers as they got older. And I just thought it was an opportunity at the time that I couldn't turn down. So I jumped at it.
That's been a wonderful move, too. When I say the name El Soprano, what comes to mind?
Yeah, you know, him winning the Summer Stakes with Gary Stevens. it's one of those races when you watch the replay and you think that's a young horse and to kind of overcome the trip he did to win, it still gives me goosebumps and puts a smile on my face, you know. You know, obviously, it was just a thrilling race. I was obviously my first year training. I've got Gary Stevens riding this horse for me, and we're in the winner's circle, and it's just, you know what I mean, one of the greatest feelings in the world, that was for sure.
Yeah, that was also your first graded stakes win, wasn't it?
Yes, sir, yes.
Yep. How'd you celebrate afterwards, do you remember?
I don't. I believe, actually, if I remember right, I think my uncle won the Auto Mile that was the Woodbine Mile. I think it was called the Auto Mile at the time.
Wow.
Maybe with numerous times. So it was a big day for the Etards.
I'm going to throw some more names at you here. I'll take you on a little trip down memory lane. You mentioned the name Calgary Cat, who was so brilliant throughout his career. Tell me more about Calgary Cat.
You know, we claimed him late in the year and got one start with him, and we put him away for the winter. And I remember when we kind of brought him back and we were getting him ready for his next campaign, he was just training lights out and just getting excited and about him. And, you know, I thought we managed him brilliantly. You know, he was a horse that every time you put the bridle on and send him over to the paddock for races, he gave it his all. And, you know, I mean, he was a very intelligent horse. I used to have these little pep talks with him before he raced and just kind of sit there and talk to him at the barn before I would go over to the front side. And I would swear that the horse could understand every word I was telling him, you know, because he just laid it out It was, you know, I mean, one of my favorite horses of all time. He holds a special place in my heart. And, I kind of choke up when I hear his name.
How do you have a pep talk with a horse?
You know, like I said, he was honestly, I would have thought he was human because I would just sit there and tell him, you know, what was kind of coming up for him and, you know, what, you know, who we needed to beat and things like that. And he just honestly just sat there and I could swear he understood every word I said. So
if you think back on his career, what do you think your favorite Calgary Cat performance was?
I would say, you know, when we went to the Breeders' Cup with him at Santa Anita, it was on the downhill turf, and he came flying to run a good fourth. You know, he had won some good races for me, grade twos, the Kennedy Road, you know, the Vigil Stakes. He won numerous stakes, but his race at the Breeders' Cup, it being my first experience, it was a thrill of a lifetime just to see him run down the lane and close so hard. It was, you know, I mean, something I'll never forget.
When you walked into the paddock to saddle him that day at the Breeders' Cup and you look around, and I'm sure there were so many of the biggest names in thoroughbred racing in that paddock along with you, and you realize, oh my goodness, I belong here. My horse belongs with this group. What goes through a trainer's mind at that point doing that for the first time?
Yeah, you know what I mean? You definitely, you know, when you see the guys like Todd Pletcher, Bill Mott, you know, they're in, whether they're in your barn or in the paddock with you, you know, you obviously feel like, wow, right? You're almost kind of feel like you're in a movie in a sense, you know, for me, it being my first time. But when that horse ran that well, and, you know, I mean, I think that kind of told me that, you know what, I belong. And I am, you know, I've always strived to be the best. I want to compete against the best. And, you know, that was just, I think, one of those moments where it just kind of sets in and says, you know what, this is where I want to be. This is the races I want to win. And it just kind of gives you more and feeds you and gives you a motivation to kind of come back again.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but I would imagine also that when your horse shows up on the big stage like that, it also gives you as a young trainer the confidence that your approach to training, the way that you're doing things, works. And I'm sure you're still tweaking things even to this day, but at least the core principles that you are basing your operation around, you realize when Calgary Cat runs a big race like that on the biggest stage that your theory, your approach, your philosophy is working.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've always had confidence in my abilities. And a lot of the times it's just having somebody give you the right opportunity. Because at the end of the day, without the horse, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are or think you are, you need the right horse. So I feel obviously very fortunate to have that horse, and especially in Calgary Cat in that sense. But, you know, definitely when you compete that well, and I remember that horse training every morning at Santa Anita, you know, he stood out and you could just tell that he was going to run well. And some media people picked up on it and would comment on the way he had been training. And that just gives you a little bit of a sense of kind of a, almost like a pat on the back that, hey, you are doing it the right way. And people are noticing and maybe you do belong here. Right. So, definitely, it helps your confidence. And, you know, when they run that well, then it's just a lot of satisfaction.
Outside of your family, were there other trainers as you were growing up and working with your dad before you went out on your own, or maybe even after you did go out on your own, that you would look up to and maybe study their approach and what they were doing?
Yeah, I only worked for my dad, so hands-on-wise, he was the only guy that I got to kind of learn from.
Yep.
But being at Woodbine, obviously Roger Atfield, you know, he was the king back here for a long time, you know, winning his Queen's Plate trainer in Canadian history, right? I always had a lot of respect and admiration for him. Was an easy guy to, very nice gentleman to talk to on the rail. And he always kind of would say hello and just kind of sometimes even give me words of encouragement. So I definitely appreciate and respect him a lot.
Would he ever invite you over for a beer about 10 o'clock in the morning when he finished training?
No, but I did actually went to a crawfish party once at his place at Basin Park. So
I say that because I remember being at Woodbine. We were covering the Queen's Plate one year, and we were on the backside in the mornings, and we were interviewing various trainers. And, of course, you have to talk with Roger Atfield. And we walked into his barn, and he said, "Would you fellas like a beer?" And I think it was about 9:30 in the morning. I wasn't going to turn him down.
No, not on a hot day in July. Definitely not.
Not at all. He's one of the greatest guys and one of the great trainers of all time, too. We've got a couple of minutes left before we have to get to a commercial break, and then we'll continue to talk more about some of the top horses you've been around after this short break. But let me throw another name at you before we do that, and I hope I'm pronouncing the horse's name right. I'll go with Melmich. Is that correct?
Yeah, Melmich. We used to, Melmich, he was known, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so that's another horse. I think we claimed him for 20 or 25. Had a bit of a bleeding issue when we claimed him, and we just kind of worked on correcting that, and that horse really turned the corner. Won the valedictory. I'm not sure if he won it twice. He may have won it twice, actually. Got beat one time by one of his stable mates, actually named Pumpkin Rumble. But definitely a horse that he gave us a lot of thrills and joy. Was very, was just a very determined horse. Gave it his all each and every time. He was definitely a memorable horse that I was fortunate to train.
It has to be so rewarding, Kevin, to drop a claim slip in on a horse, get the horse, and then see that horse progress the way a horse like Melmich did and Calgary Cat did, to take them to new heights with their career. That has to be so rewarding for you.
It definitely is. Obviously there's a lot of luck involved in those situations. Both those horses, there were shakes in for them, so we were lucky to win the shake, first of all. They have the talent there, and it's just about trying to fine-tune them and figuring out what makes it work for them. And we were fortunate enough to be able to hit the right buttons with those two horses, and they rewarded us significantly.
Kevin Attard, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton, as we continue to celebrate Woodbine Week here on HRRN. We'll go all the way through opening day of the Woodbine Thoroughbred Meet, which comes up on Saturday. Stay tuned for more special content. Kevin, stay with me if you don't mind. We're going to get to a short break. We'll come back and we'll talk about a couple of horses by the name of Starship Jubilee and Moira. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton on HRRN.
Nominate now for this year's Faisig Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July Sale. A strong market for precocious and athletic yearlings that attract the sport's leading end users. Last year, 40% of yearlings sold brought $100,000 or more. The 103rd Saratoga Sale. The crown jewel of American yearling sales, Saratoga set new sale records for the second year in a row, including the highest price yearling sold in the world in 2023.
Tice upstairs, $4 million even.
New York Bred Yearlings, the number one marketplace for New York breds, held during the Saratoga race meet. Selected sales, superior results. Visit selectedyearlings.faisigtipton.com to nominate now and rise above the crowd at our 2024 Selected Yearling Sales.
It's time to get ready for the 2024 Thoroughbred season at Woodbine Racetrack, the number one turf track in North America. Season runs from April to December with over $62 million in purses with an industry-leading stakes program, including two Canadian Classics, the Grade 1 Million Dollar Rico Woodbine Mile and the Million Dollar King's Plate. Woodbine offers top safety-rated racing and training services, plus world-class facilities. Make Woodbine your home turf this season. Learn more at woodbine.com.
Well, Fasig's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasig Tipton has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasig Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Going to the front, War of Will with Admiralty Pier. They share it from Starship Jubilee. Olympic Runner down the outside and March to the Arch getting home between horses. But Starship Jubilee is run to the front, and Starship Jubilee out in front of War of Will. March to the Arch into second spot, but Starship Jubilee has gone on to defeat the boys in the Rico Woodbine Mile. And here comes the filly, Moira, and she's exploding down the outside, and in the blink of an eye has raced to the front, and it's Moira out in a lead, two lengths, racing home is Hall of Dreams down the outside. But the mighty filly has devastated them, and the 163rd Queen's Plate is a big win for Moira. She is stunning, wins six lengths.
Absolutely stunning. Robert Geller with the calls of the 2020 Woodbine Mile, won by Starship Jubilee, and the 2022 Queen's Plate, won by Moira. Both of those horses going on to be named Horse of the Year. Brilliant, brilliant racehorses, both trained by my special guest here on Trainer Talk. That is Kevin Attard. We'll continue this conversation momentarily. Also going to bring you a conversation in about the final 15 minutes of the program, so about 15 minutes from right now, you're going to hear from dual Hall of Famer Mark Cassie as we continue to celebrate Woodbine Week on HRRN. Mark recently earning and being recognized with his 12th consecutive Sovereign Award as Canada's Outstanding Trainer. We will bring you that conversation in about 15 minutes and some wonderful comments there on owner Gary Barber that you will not want to miss. If you missed any portion of this show so far or any of our Trainer Talk shows, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast whenever you have some time, and you can do that too on every podcast platform. So however you access your podcast, type in Horse Racing Radio Network and follow along with all of our shows we bring your way each and every week. And Kevin, how about those two calls? Starship Jubilee, Moira, just two really special racehorses.
Yeah, they definitely are. Starship Jubilee, obviously, three-time filly mare turf champion here in Canada, Horse of the Year. She gave us some thrilling races, and it was unfortunate that in her final race at the Breeders' Cup, she kind of lost the rider leaving the gate because she had such a great season that year, and I really thought she was kind of primed and ready for a big race at the Breeders' Cup. She's a very special filly I'll never forget, that's for sure. My number one racehorse, I guess, right now. A question was asked to me not long ago, and she kind of holds the number one spot, but Moira's a closing second right now.
Yep, yeah, Moira, really special. But let's stick with Starship Jubilee for just a minute. When did you first realize with Starship Jubilee that, oh my goodness, this filly is not like any other filly I've been around?
Yeah, well, we claimed her at Gulfstream, and I had kind of watched a few replays and thought, you know, looked like a handy horse to have. And we claimed her again, won a shake. So lucky to kind of win that shake for her and wanted to protect her because I wanted to bring her back to Woodbine. So ran her a couple more times at Gulfstream and she just kept winning and getting faster. And, you know, it got to the point where, you know, she was running on turf. We had shipped up now from Gulfstream to Woodbine and there weren't many really options available. So I said at this point, you know, there's the NASA coming up here. Let's kind of give her a crack at it. And, you know, we'll see how she kind of fares. And, you know, if not, then we'll regroup and there's no disgrace in trying. And sure enough, she comes up and wins the NASA. And I think just with every win, she just got more confident and just the confidence grew and everything we kind of kept throwing at her. She just kept overcoming and just continued to win and get better as time went along. And, you know, the older she got, the better she got. And it's just a great racehorse, you know, hard to replicate those type of fillies.
When a trainer has a horse like a Starship Jubilee that turns out to be so good, so talented, wins so many big races and means so much to your career, when she does retire and you come to the barn that next morning and that stall is empty, what's that feeling like for a trainer?
Yeah, well, we were at Keeneland and I remember she was picked up that night to go to the farm and, you know, obviously she was going to her second career to become a broodmare and I walked her on the van and I kind of turned her loose and I just kind of gave her a kiss goodbye and told her how much she meant to me. And, you know, I mean, I still kind of tear up because of it because I missed her so much and I knew I was going to miss her. And, you know, she meant so much to my life, to my career, to my family. It was just very special. And, you know, you never know if you're going to get a horse that good again in your barn, you know, so they're hard to replace. And she just, you know, obviously I love her very much and, you know, hoping that she can produce a baby that's half as good as her at least.
A couple of years later, here comes Moira. Tell me the story of Moira.
Yeah, so Donato Lanny put a group together and he told me that they were going to buy some two-year-olds and send them up here and give me the opportunity to train them. So I was obviously excited about that. And this filly comes in and she's a little quirky. You know, we took her to the gate and she had a kind of a wreck there. And we kind of had to work on kind of getting her kind of gate antics under control and just started working her a little bit more and she's showing some more potential and she's getting ready to run. And I know there's a Canadian bred 2-year-old stake. It's called the Princess Elizabeth. You know, it's probably one of the more prestigious 2-year-old filly races here in Canada. So I told Donato, I said, I got this crazy idea. I just want you to kind of roll with me. I said, I won't disappoint you. I won't embarrass you. So I said, let me run this filly in the Princess Elizabeth first time out. And sure enough, you know, we did. And she ran a dynamite race. You know, it was just very professional. Obviously showed at that point there was a big future ahead for her.
That win in the Queen's Plate, now known as the King's Plate, but that win in 2022 in the Queen's Plate, your first in that particular race as somebody whose family has meant so much to Woodbine and growing up there and being around that racetrack, what did that mean for Kevin Attard?
Yeah, that race is a race that every Canadian wants to win. You know, if you call Woodbine home and the word Queen's Plate or King's Plate now comes up, you know, that's the race that you want to win. To me, it's like the Stanley Cup of hockey to horse racing at Woodbine. There's no bigger event that on the calendar. You know, the crowd comes out. They're dressed to the nines. You know, it's a mile a quarter under scale weight. You know, it's it's the Canadian Kentucky Derby, I guess, right? So it's a race that I definitely always wanted. Got close to winning early in my career, but it's a tough race to win. And there's some great trainers that train here at Woodbine, and that's one race that's eluded them. And it just shows you, to get a three-year-old to go that distance and to be at its prime is definitely not an easy task, a tall order, and it takes a special horse. And obviously, Moira is a very special horse. Fittingly enough, she broke the track record that day. And, is the last kind of Queen's Plate winner. And who knows, for how long, I guess.
Yeah. She is still in training. We'll get to see her at the upcoming Woodbine meet. What are you seeing from her now that she's back in your barn?
She's doing well. She's had a good winter. She just got here about a couple of weeks ago, had her first breeze over the Woodbine main track last Saturday. And, she looks a little bigger, a little stronger than she did last season. And, hopefully, she can have a good year coming up for her. Obviously, she had a thrilling race in the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf last season. And we're hoping to do a little bit better this year with her.
Well, Kevin, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, nobody better to look back on the history, the tradition, and the legacy of Woodbine and your family than you, my friend. And it has been such a great joy to be able to look back on that and take you down memory lane. And I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. All the best going forward. Good luck in the 2024 meet. And I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you again.
All right. That is Kevin Attard here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Typically, I would spend another 20 minutes or so visiting with Kevin right up until the end of the program. But I wanted to make sure in recognition of Woodbine Week here on HRN that I also brought you some comments and a look back on my conversation with Mark Cassie, the two-time Hall of Famer, dual Hall of Famer, and 12 consecutive Sovereign Awards to his credit. He received that honor last week in Toronto at the ceremonies, and Mark took time to join me on my Equine Forum show last weekend. And he spent a lot of time talking about not his legacy necessarily, but the legacy of his owners and the horses that he has been around. It's a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here he is, dual Hall of Famer, Mark Cassie. Can we now consider this a dynasty?
I'll leave that one to you.
It has to be, right? 12 consecutive times. That's incredible, my friend. Well done.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
When you received this award again this past week, I know it never gets old, but what goes through your mind when you hear your name called again?
You know, Mike, there's still nerves. You know, you're kind of sitting there waiting to hear your name, you know. I felt more confident this year than in many years. It could have been, I don't think it could have been. Without a doubt, I think it was our best year we ever had at Woodbine. So I felt more confident this year than on many years, but you never know. You know, I've said it all along, and I understand, you know, human nature. I can't just win. I have to kind of overwhelm, because I'm sure a lot of voters are tired of voting for me.
Yeah, well, you're always trying to compete against yourself and improve upon what you did the year before, and that's just, you would do that whether you were winning or you weren't.
Oh, yeah, I'd be lying if I don't pay attention to what, and that's not just in, you know, that's just not in Canada. It's everywhere. I'm always looking at what did we do last year and how can we do it better, or what do we need to do better. And if I'm not doing better, it's disappointing. So you're 100% correct. I'm always competing against myself.
Where do you display all of your Sovereign Awards and the other awards you've been lucky enough to receive over the years?
Well, so the Sovereign Award is kind of unique. And so when you win your first Sovereign Award, you get the trophy. From that point on, you get like a gold coin.
Oh.
And you, what they do is they put it into the base of the Sovereign Award itself. But we've run out of space in the base.
Yeah.
So now we just lay them next to it.
I love it. Does it get to the point, Mark? I know you want to hear your name called, and you talked about being competitive and trying to improve on what you did the year before. Fev Rover, the champion female turf horse from last year, and Canada's Horse of the Year. There were others that you trained, several others that received awards this past Thursday night. Does it get to the point where, yeah, as much as you love hearing your name called as outstanding trainer, you're equally as proud to hear the names of those horses that you trained get recognized for their incredible campaigns?
Without a doubt. So something unique, I don't know that it's ever been done before, but it's something that I'm extremely proud of, and I wouldn't even know. You don't know it until they announce the three finalists for Horse of the Year, and I had no idea, you know. But we had all three, so I would say that's pretty unique. It's definitely unique for me. I don't know that I've ever had more than one horse. You know, we've had Horse of the Year in the past, but I don't know if I've ever even had two that made it to the finals, and this year it was three. So that was a proud moment. But without a doubt, the proudest moment for me was Gary Barber. Mm-hmm. That's been very frustrating to me. That he's never been the leading owner before, you know, when the Sovereign Awards in Canada. I just don't think people realize, because, you know, he's in a lot of different partnerships. He has a lot of his own, but he has, and they just don't give him credit for it all. And this year they did, and it was very emotional. I had planned on being there. Unfortunately, the Sovereign Awards come at a time when a lot of times we have Derby horses preparing big things going on. So I don't get there all the time. It's not an easy task for me. I had every intention of going this year. I wanted to go because I thought Gary was a shoo-in, and I wanted to be there to talk about Gary. But it happened that, one, they did it a week prior to the start of racing, which they never have done before, not in my memory. But it ended up being right in the middle of the OBS April sale. And the OBS, not just the sale itself, which, you know, we buy a lot of young horses, but I'm also a director of OBS. And we have a lot of emergency meetings and a lot of things that have to be done and dealt with on a quick basis. And I feel that I need to be there for that. I mean, we had one yesterday that took about 10 minutes, but it could, you know, we were able to work through and get it done. And so, you know, I had to be there. So it was disappointing. Probably I wrote a speech. I took some time writing it, you know, for Gary, and I'm not sure I would have gotten through it, because Gary is one of my dearest friends. Not just, you know, do I train for him, but he's somebody that I talk to every day, you know. So that was special.
Yeah. Yeah. Very special. And I'm shocked I was shocked when I read through the press release to learn that Gary Barber had not won a Sovereign Award as outstanding owner prior to this. it just blew me away because you think about his contributions to the sport, not just in Canada, but here in the States and worldwide, and everything he has done from an ownership perspective. It's pretty remarkable. And he's somebody that certainly deserves that recognition that he received on Thursday night.
Yes. You know, a few years ago, I can't remember the exact year, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was very disappointed that he didn't win the Eclipse Award. He had a phenomenal year. And I felt like, of course, I'm biased. I felt like he should. I think he maybe made the finalists. But I thought that, again, he didn't get the credit because, you know, his earnings are spread out because he's in lots of different partnerships. But without a doubt, his contribution to Canadian racing would only be second to maybe Sampson. And, you know, Sampson's not around anymore, but through when I first started going there, they were dominant. And people don't realize, you know, how many horses Gary Barber runs at Woodbine. And not to mention, you know, he goes to their Canadian sale and buys Canadian breads, which helps there. You know, my boy Prince was the sales topper at the CTHS sale in Canada. He buys numerous Canadian breads, you know, in the U.S., and he's always trying to win the Queen's Plate. I think this was our third Queen's Plate he's won. So, yes, very frustrating to me, very frustrating. And so it was important and overdue and well deserved.
Where did your relationship with Gary Barber begin, Mark? How did you first get introduced to him?
So that's a good question. So in 2011, there was a guy, young man, he was just going out on his own, and he was starting a new syndication, and he called me up. I had run a horse, and he said, I understand this horse is for sale. And I said, yes. And I think, you know, I think he's worth the money. We owned him. He flew up, he bought the horse, and we watched our first race together. And that was Aaron Wellman.
Oh, wow.
So he bought, you know, that was the beginning of Eclipse. And when Aaron was getting going, Gary helped him get going. And so Gary bought part of the horse. The horse's name was Patriotic and Proud. And a short time after the purchase and we ran him, I got a call from Gary and introducing himself. And I know right where I can tell you right where I was sitting, right where I was standing in my house when he called me. And he said, "Hi, I'm Gary Barber." And I said, "Oh, very nice to talk to you." And he goes, "I'm very interested in Canadian racing, and I'd like to get more involved there." And I said, "Well, I'm your man." And since that point in 2011, I'm not sure if we've won one or two Breeders' Cups, definitely won. I won my first Breeders' Cup for Gary. We've won two Queen's Plates and a King's Plate. We've won the Preakness. We won lots of grade ones. And, you know, he's just been a great owner for us. But more importantly, he's a great friend. You know, if I I've said this and I mean it, the guy can move mountains. If I need something, if somebody needs, he knows people in everywhere. And you wouldn't know, we get a kick out of my wife, Tina, and I, and Colby, when we go around with him. You just wouldn't know, you know, how successful it, because he doesn't flaunt it. He doesn't do it. I mean, I just can't say enough great things about the man.
Wonderful relationship, not just a business relationship, but as you heard Mark say, a friendship as well that has been ongoing for many years. It will continue to do so. And that leads all of us to be excited about what the future holds for Gary Barber, Mark Cassie, and all the horses that they're going to be associated with going forward. Mark, I mentioned that there were other horses outside of Fevrover that received awards that you had trained, two-year-old female, two-year-old male, three-year-old female, three-year-old male. You kind of dominated those categories. Fevrover, the champion female turf horse and horse of the year. What's next for Fevrover? What might we expect from her coming up in 2024?
Fevrover is a bit of a character. She is a tough, tough horse. I can tell you, if it wasn't for Tapita and her training at Woodbine, she won two grade ones last year. She would have never won a race. She just doesn't handle dirt very well. In fact, whenever I give her a break, I bring her back. I gallop her for a little while because our track in Ocala is dirt. And I get her to Woodbine as soon as I can. So she's at Woodbine. I think right now we're looking at possibly the Nassau, you know, to get her back going. But we're going to obviously aim again for the Breeders' Cup. She kind of was very flat in the Breeders' Cup, and I felt like she had come into the Breeders' Cup in good order, but it just wasn't her day. But that'll be our target again for 2024. Probably the E.P. Taylor again, and we'll go from there. Maybe in the Beverly D. Never hurts to have a couple other grade ones, you know. So
yeah, why not?
We'll see. But she kind of has to tell us. She's unique.
Well, Mark, I can tell you, I was extremely happy to see your name called on Thursday night. It's a special thing for you. It never gets old. And you talked about continuing to improve upon what you've done in the past. I hope you have another banner year here in 2024, and I'm sure we're going to be talking again before too long. Really appreciate the visit here this morning, and congrats to you and Gary Barber and the entire team on all your success.
Thanks for having me, Gary. Thanks for having me, Mike. Too many Gary. All right. Thanks, Mike.
My thanks to Mark Cassie. My thanks to Kevin Attard for spending time with me on this edition of Trainer Talk. Of course, Mark with me last week on our Equine Forum show, but I really wanted to bring you that interview again, considering the fact we are celebrating Woodbine Week here on HRRN and getting a chance to talk to those two individuals and let you hear their thoughts, their memories. Pretty special stuff. So my thanks to Kevin and to Mark. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast whenever you get some time, and you can do that too on every podcast platform. Really appreciate you being with me again on this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios. Chauncey for handling all of our social media. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.